We continue this lecture and the next two lectures in recalling and introducing notions of numerical or linear algebra and numerical linear algebra. The last definition we gave last Friday was
the reducibility
of a square matrix. You remember it? This notion simply consists in requiring the existence of a permutation matrix P such that transformed matrix D has this form. Essentially, there are zero entries in this position. Why this property? Is interesting for us. It may be seen as giving an advantage in linear system solving. I mean, if you have a linear system whose coefficient matrix is reducible, it is possible to exploit this structural property in this way. If you know the permutation matrix, first you multiply on the left the two sides of the linear system. Then you put between the matrix A and the vector X this product, which makes the identity matrix, so all is unchanged, and then you see here the matrix B, which is reduced. So if, for simplicity, we call this vector Y and this vector C, we have in front of us another linear system, easier to solve, since the coefficient matrix is a block upper diagonal. So you have the unknown vector y, the new unknown vector y, which can be partitioned considering the first k and the last n minus k entries In the same way, the new right-hand side, see? So, first you can solve the block equation yielding by the last n minus k equation. This is a problem, a linear system of order k, and then you can solve the leading left linear system, which has a coefficient matrix V sub 1 1 unknown vector Y sub 1 and on the right C sub 1 minus here is psi sub 1 minus well, which is the advantage? If you know the complexity value, the complexity cost of the method, the algorithm you are using to solve the system, say, the complexity of solving a linear system with a prescribed method, call it T of n, we have instead of solving the complete system, which would cost and the solution of two system. I am for as usual for the sake of simplicity make the assumption that k is the is n over 2 is the half of so we have the matrix split in four sublocks with the same size n over 2. Okay? And if you know that for Gaussian elimination, which is the most popular method to solve linear system, this is if we consider only the multiplicative flops, multiplications and divisions, we have about n cubed over 3. Here we would find 2 times 3 fourth of the total amounts of flops, floating point operations, we would need if we had to solve the complete system. This is clearly an advantage. What could be the problem? we must know, we have to know the permutation field which gives us the reduced matrix. So it's important, there is a well-known theorem which gives a necessary and sufficient condition for a matrix, for a square matrix, to be reducible. Maybe you know this result. Anyway, we state it without proving. You find this this theorem at the end of the section on the basics of linear algebra. Theorem: the matrix A is we give the statement this way, is reducible if and only if the directed graph associated and connected associated with A is not strongly connected. The meaning of this result, the directed graph connected with the matrix, is a graph having as many nodes as the order of the matrix. Two nodes, I and J, are connected with a directed arc if, and not if, this is the definition of this kind of graph, the corresponding entry of the matrix A sub ij is not zero. If an entry of specific entry of each entry of the matrix, generic entry of the matrix A sub ij is not zero, we put in the graph an arc starting from the node corresponding to the row to the node J corresponding to the column. You know the definition of strongly connected. It means that from any node it is possible to reach any other node with a path. Well, let us make an example. I repeat, we don't prove this result, but here you find, let us consider the same example you find after this theorem. The matrix, let the matrix be this. The numerical values of the entries have no importance. The all important thing is the location of the zeros, obviously. The graph, the answer, the example consists in checking if this matrix is or not reducible using the conditions stated by the theorem, and possibly in finding the permutation, one of the permutation is not unique, one of the permutations which reduce the matrix A in the desired form. Well, the graph we have the four nodes. From one, we go only to three. We remark that in this context, the fact that the principal entries, those on the main diagonal, are or not zero is not important, has no influence regarding this property. From two, we consider all the rows. From two, we go to one. Three is not important. Three, four. From three we go only to one. And from last row we go to each other column. So. Then we roughly check the existence of paths starting from each node and possibly reaching other nodes. From one, we can go only to three, here we nodes which can be reached with only an arc or with a path. From two we go to four. From three we go to one. And from the last node, four, we go to all the others. So, the answer is the graph strongly connected? No. There are, why? Because there are nodes, there is at least one node, from which it is not possible to reach all other nodes, for which there exists at least another node which can be reached. We see immediately that from one we can arrive only to three. We cannot reach two and four. But the conclusion, according to the theorem, is clear. The graph is not strongly connected, so the matrix is reducible. It is useful, it is simple if n is small, as in this case, to determine a permutation for the reduction. The permutation this could be seen if we give a look to the proof, but it is a simple idea, so we can say this inside this example, how P can be found. Well, if the graph is not strongly connected, there exists at least one node, call it P sub j, from which some nodes, at least one node as usual, cannot be reached. So the idea is this. Consider, let me call in the same way as here, capital P the subset of nodes or indices, it's the same thing, the subset of nodes containing this node, which must exist, and all the nodes which can be reached from this. The complementary subset Q M minus or slash capital P. Well, N is the set of all nodes. In general, a working permutation is given. I need the matrix so I have not to rub it in the other words. The permutation P can be defined as one of the permutations sending subset Q in the first positions, the indices of the nodes included in Q in the first values of indices. Let us call the cardinality of Q K. Q is formed by K nodes. We put these K nodes at the beginning, in the first positions, and the indices, the nodes, it is the same, NP, are put in the last, in the tailing positions. In this way, we construct the matrix permutation, the permutation matrix P, capital P. The theorem says that the matrix B has the prescribed form. Let us check that this works on our matrix. So, the set P can be chosen, put in inside it. The index 1 corresponds to a node from which some other node can be reached, and the nodes which can be reached from 1. The only node that which can be reached from 1 is 3. So Q is given by 2 and 4. A permutation sending the nodes, the indices of the nodes in Q in the first position could be P of 2 is 2 and P of 4 is 1. This is transformed in 1, 2, the first two positions. In this case K is 2. So we can leave 3. In its position, and 1 is sent to 4. To conclude the example, matrix B obtained in this way, if you want to see the matrix P, P by definition is obtained permuting the rules of the identity matrix in the same way according to the permutation. This is the function defined over the integers 1 up to 4. This is the matrix. The corresponding matrix has first row the 4 of the identity matrix. Second is the same. The third is the same. And the fourth is the first row of the identity matrix. So the matrix P has these entries. Well, if you we find the transpose. If you multiply P by A, you obtain a matrix whose rows are the rows of A permuted according to the same permutation. So here is only the first row is interchanged with the last row. First we put the last row in the first position. The third. This is P. multiplying this matrix by P transpose has the effect of interchanging the first and the last column. And you obtain the last column and here is the first row. And you see clearly the partition, the block partitioning of the matrix B. Which is effectively a reduced matrix. In several frameworks during the course, we will be in consider irreducibility as a useful property. From this example, we saw that if a matrix is reducible, some important problems, like linear system solving, are simplified. Well, there are other important cases in which, if the matrix is irreducible, it is better. It's better because some iterative processes converge, because there exist some special kinds of solution of problems. This is an example. I don't remember if I told you. In the first lesson, we saw briefly the model of the page rank algorithm. Well, the matrix in that model has to be modified in order to transform it in an irreducible matrix, because the computations necessary to find a solution can be made using more efficient algorithms, which works well only if the matrix is irreducible. So with this instance, we are over with the first chapter. In the second chapter of the didactic material you find on the page of the course, there is a survey of definitions and properties of eigenvalues and eigenvectors of matrices. Here we will recall shortly the main definitions and the properties which usually are shown in linear algebra or discrete mathematics courses in the first year of the undergraduate degree. So, eigenvalues, autovalori, and eigenvectors of square matrices. Main definitions
we start from the equations, the matrix, the matrix vector equation. The assumption is that x we start with a complex matrix A. If there exists some non-zero x such that A by x is equal to lambda scalar, complex scalar by x, then lambda is called eigenvalue, and each x which satisfies this equation, star equation, is called eigenvalue. You know that this equation is equivalent or better, the fact that lambda is a number satisfying this equation for some non-zero x is equivalent to the fact that the property written here, that lambda satisfies this equation, which is called characteristic equation. This is a polynomial. Which is called a characteristic polynomial. Polynomial of degree n with complex coefficients. I don't restate all the properties. Some of them, the properties which will be used often in the following. Let me make a list.
If A is not singular,
the inverse has as eigenvalues, the inverse of the eigenvalues. The Hermitian of A, if we consider the conjugate transpose, has eigenvalues, the conjugates.
If A is Hermitian, its eigenvalues are real, has real eigenvalues. You know this property, I guess, for symmetrics, for real symmetric matrices. If A is real, Hermitian means symmetric, and you know that the symmetric real matrix
as real eigenvalues.
Besides Hermitian matrices, we have considered unitary matrices. The unitary matrices have unitary eigenvalues. What does it mean unitary for a scalar? Its absolute value, or modulus, is 1. We don't prove any, we have no time, in many cases you have already seen the proofs in some other course. But let us consider one of these properties. Let us try to prove it by using some of the properties definition that we have already given last time. I mean, if I want to prove that the unitary matrix has necessarily eigenvalues of modulus 1. It's very useful to get familiar with a quick use of the definitions and properties. So, A unitary X eigenvector, so it is a non-zero vector, lambda eigenvalue. If we consider the scalar product of each of the vectors at each side on each side of the equation of the definition by themselves. I mean, I consider the scalar product of A by X by itself and the scalar product
on each side,
membro sinistro, membro destro, su entrambi i lati dell'uguaglianza. I multiply scalarly this vector by itself in this way. Scalar products in different contexts are written in various ways. We have decided, much or more implicitly, to write scalar product of two vectors as z sub 1, z sub 2 in this way. You recall this from last time. So if the vector is this, we consider its conjugate transpose, it's Hermitian, as usual, you have to see in your mind this is a row vector, multiplied by this, which is a column vector, and we make the same thing on the other side. I consider this vector scalarly multiplied by itself. What happens? Well, from now on, if I have the right idea, this is the right idea, but I will realize that this is the idea just in a while,
This is all very mechanical. The conjugate transpose of a product, whatever kind of factors they are inside, is obtained multiplying in reverse order the Hermitian conjugate transpose of the various factors. So, the same thing, I have forgotten the lambda. So here you have formally I could write lambda to the h.
Lambda
to the h, it's the same thing as the conjugate. But it is not wrong to write with h, if you will. The result I write here is, recall that A is unitary, so this product makes the identity matrix. So only x to the h, identity x. Here you have two numbers. The conjugate of lambda by lambda and the scalar product of the vector x by itself. How can we write better this formula? We don't require much about complex number, but this is a kind of product which will occur often. The conjugate of a complex number by the number itself is the square of the absolute value, the complex absolute value of the number. To be clearer, if you represent lambda in the Cartesian way, fashion, real part, imaginary part, this quantity is equal to the sum of the two squares. This is the definition of absolute value of definition of the Gram-Schmidt procedure have. This is. Wait a moment. This is the definition of models. For the vectors, we have already seen that the scalar product over the complex numbers of a vector by itself is, is the sum of the squares of the moduli. The quantity square root of the scalar product of x by itself is usually denoted by the symbol of norm. It's a particular choice of norm. We will see the norms next time or after. The two norms of the vector. to conclude the example or proof, we can finally rewrite the last equation, last formula, S. This is the norm 2 of the vector x squared. This is the absolute value of lambda squared. This is, again, norm 2 of the vector x squared. But x is an eigenvector, so it is a non-zero vector, and its norm is also non-zero. So we can divide by the two norm squared and finally obtain that the square of the modulus,
how do you obtain the equation?
Like this.
The left side. How do you do?
This. So,
Okay.
The modulus is a non-negative number, so we can extract the square root on both sides, and we're simply that a unitary matrix has necessarily eigenvalue of modulus 1. Before stopping for a short break, remember the geometric meaning which eigenvalues and eigenvectors have. The eigenvectors geometrically represents the directions which are living unchanged under the transformation, the linear transformation associated to the matrix. And always geometrically, the eigenvalues measure the rate of variation of the vectors along that particular specific directions. The unitary matrices have the property that they transform their eigenvectors in other vectors, which are again eigenvectors, having the same length. You write this. You can read in this equation that the vector x is transformed in another vector which has the same direction, and it is enlarged by a factor given by lambda. We have just found that if A is unitary, lambda has modulus 1. This means, in geometric terms, that vector x, the eigenvector, is transformed in another vector which has the same length. For unitary matrices, this is true for all vectors. The unitary matrices are very special matrices. If you if you consider, say, why another vector generic, and you consider the length of y and the length of z, the transformed of y. The length is given by some norm. Let us consider the two norm. The two norm of z let us consider the square is, as we have already just seen, this scalar product. Which is given by this. But A is unitary, so you find again the norm, the two norm, the Euclidean norm of Y. So unitary matrices leave the length of vectors unchanged. We stop for 10 minutes. Any questions?
I don't understand. If the equation A dot A per epsilon equals to zeta, if it's true, means...
This is a definition. I define Z as the image of X. I pick a generic vector X, multiply it by A,
and l'equazione AX uguale scalare per X. Quella sopra ancora a x uguale scalare per x
sopra
a x uguale a scalare per lambda uguale
a x. non lo trovo.
È
questo?
Sì. Se è vera, quindi A è unitaria.
This holds only for eigenvectors. That means that eigenvectors and the values. This is the generic definition. La generica definizione di autovalore e autovalore, autovettore. Qui invece ne prendiamo uno qualsiasi. Cioè prima abbiamo visto che nel caso specifico il discorso ci ha portato lì delle matrici unitarie, gli autovalori hanno modulo 1. Quindi vuol dire che gli autovettori vengono lasciati della stessa lunghezza. Però questo per le matrici unitarie è un fatto più generale. Vale per qualsiasi vettore, cioè sono talmente speciali che questa proprietà non ce l'hanno solo per gli autovettori, ma per qualsiasi autovalore, per qualsiasi vettore, scusi, considerando la norma 2. Chiaro? Allora prendiamoci 10 minuti di sosta.